In the 19th century, young people used to round off their cultural education by setting out on a grand tour, usually of Europe. And they would marvel at the masterpieces of painting and sculpture. They'd wander the vast spaces of cathedrals and palaces, listening to music, sampling a few languages. Jeff Warren is a writer and former CBC radio producer. He had just finished his book, The Head Trip, Adventures on the Wheel of Consciousness, and he was feeling a bit lost about what to do next. He decided to devise his own version of the Grand Tour, but one with a twist. He would seek wisdom rather than pure culture. He compiled a list of great minds, neuroscientists, philosophers, developmental biologists, anthropologists, and mystics. Where to begin? California, I think. And the great scholar of religion, Houston Smith. Jeff Warren, welcome.
Thank you.
Jealous, five shades of jealous of this world tour of yours. Tell me about Houston Smith. Why was he at the top of your list?
Well, I mean, Houston Smith is a giant in the field of religious studies. He kind of is peerless almost in that world. He became really, really well known because of a series that Bill Moyers did called The Wisdom and Faith of Houston Smith. But his big book was called The Religions of Man. It was published back in 1958, now called The World's Religions. But he's basically a champion of what's called the perennial philosophy. And the perennial philosophy essentially holds that all the world's great wisdom traditions, all the great religions, they have at their core a common set of beliefs about the world. That core idea is that at heart, existence is perfect, that it's divine somehow, and that it can be experienced directly. Because the other thing about Houston Smith is his view of religion was sort of a mystical view, in that it was about, a lot of it came down to your experience, you could have a first person experiential connection with God or the divine or whatever it was. And this was, and all of these different traditions had kind of mystical versions of them that were that you could tap into that and you could express that. So he's basically a kind of, a lot of people see him almost as a kind of living saint. So not just for these ideas, but also because he has a great moral example. He's incredibly wise and dignified. And
how old is he now?
Right now he's 90. And he looks like Elijah or something. He's tall, and he has these clear kind of mischievous eyes, and he has this very languid way of speaking. And I mean, he gets mobbed at conferences. When he goes to religious studies conferences, people see him as a kind of living saint. And he also has some really interesting ideas about mind and consciousness.
So I'm going to take you into the perennial philosophy and the mind and consciousness. But before we get into that, and I don't want to turn this into, better homes and gardens, but I mean, there you were, Houston Smith's place in Berkeley, California. Where does he live? What's it like? What are his surroundings? What's the vibe?
Yeah, well, the vibe is great. I mean, he's in a little kind of funky, he's a white little cottage with mauve trim where he lives with his wife in the Berkeley Hills, because he's now a kind of a professor emeritus at Berkeley. As I approached his house, I knocked on the door, and his wife answered. Her name's Kendra, and she sort of shook my hand and said, "Houston will be right down." And it turns out he gets 4 or 5 of these visits a week, and he always meets them at the same time at 4 o'clock. Uh-huh. And people kind of make these pilgrimages from all over the world to kind of sit and chat with him. So I sat in his sort of right by the main entranceway, and sort of waited for him to come down. And there he comes slowly down the stairs. He's got a walker, and he's sort of stooped. And he's got these sort of old man pants that pull up around his belly. But he was, he's really gracious, and his eyes sort of sparkle. And even before we started, I noticed there was a wall hanging in the entranceway, and it had a Chinese calligraphy on it. So I asked him about that. And he basically, there's a perfect clip we can play here, but it basically said something like mind in the world. And I'll let him explain a little bit in this first clip.
Houston Smith on a piece of art very strategically placed right by his front door.
I could position it anywhere, but I position it there intentionally, because before I step out into this mechanistic, scientistic world that says that most of the universe consists of dead matter. Before I have to go out and deal with that world, I need to be reinforced by the true view. The universe is suffused with sentience, or we could say consciousness, if you wish. And I profoundly believe that that is true.
What do you think is the single most important insight to be had about consciousness?
That it is the fundamental reality in the universe, not dead matter.
The sense of, this is rock solid, this belief for him, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not a guy playing with mysticism. This is just, this is, there's a ferocity in what he's saying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a guy who grew up with Methodist parents, missionaries in China, and he's had strong faith his entire life.
And he goes to church. I mean, he's been a church-going man his whole life.
He goes to church, but he also goes to other, I mean, he's famous for not just the theory, but for the practice. So he's spent years doing Zen Buddhism, yes, you know, and Vedantic Hinduism and Sufi, the dervishes. I mean, he's actually done these different practices. And he's had experiences where he's felt with great conviction that he's connected into the larger world, that we live in a universe where the mind has some greater role. And he's right, you know, in terms of it is possible. And I, you know, just to give you an example, I just got back from the Towards the Science of Consciousness conference, which is the big sort of multidisciplinary consciousness conference that happens around the world. And it brings in people from, you know, philosophers and neurobiologists and scientists and mystics. And it's a really polyglot. And, you know, when you go there and you're in this sort of bazaar, a kind of caravan of different views about the mind, the idea that mind is just stuck in the brain and that's all there is, it's just one view on many. There are many wares being sold there, you know, and many open, excited discussions, including those with scientists and neurobiologists who are weighing in and who are open to that there is no certainty about this kind of thing.
You know, we had Richard Dawkins on the program, mm-hmm, a while back, and I think he might say, well, this is not a bazaar, it is bizarre that people just would have this view of the universe has a consciousness to it. I mean, and I know you and Houston Smith talked a little bit about that kind of new atheist view, mm-hmm, that does say, well, the idea of a consciousness permeating the universe is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Right.
What's Houston Smith's take on that whole view of the world?
Well, I mean, I think Houston has, his basic thing is that he calls that scientism. And scientism, in Houston's view, is this idea that science is the only possible way of apprehending the world or apprehending reality, as if there were no other modes of knowing that had any value whatsoever. And so just to give you, and we know that to be kind of untrue in a way. If you think about, say, emotional knowledge, you may love somebody, and you don't. That's not a rational sentiment. It's a kind of knowing you have about other people or about the world that is not based strictly on a kind of rational mode of thinking. And he would say that there's a way of spiritual knowing that is similar. You know, I talked to him about this, and I said, "Well, where is, you know, from the scientific point of view, it's totally understandable why they would say that. They're looking for material. They're looking, so they would say, where is the evidence?" And so when I asked him where the evidence was, this was his response.
To hell with you. Much in the news is Dawkins. He's a loudmouth, and unfortunately he writes very well, so he gets the attention of the public. However, when he dismisses, does life have meaning, because he says there is no scientific proof. I have coined a phrase, brilliant stupidity. Brilliant because the guy knows the theory of evolution just backwards and forward. However, when it comes to the big questions, he's blind, stupid, brilliant stupidity. But there's a danger of our getting too Sirius, so I'm going to puncture our Sirius balloon with a little witticism that you probably heard. What is my... It doesn't matter. What is matter? Never mind.
So, yeah, I mean... It was so fun, this conversation.
No kidding. I wish I could have sat
it. It was terrific. You know, and it was interesting. Like, it was as if, like, after all the years of scholarly articles, kind of what kind of came up was he spoke in this sort of very aphoristic way and almost these sort of Zen-like Koans. And,
yeah, the Zen-like, to hell with you.
Well, right. Well, sometimes he was more direct. That was an unusual directness. I mean, later he did actually say, you know, he's very, he kind of modified that a bit and sort of said, you know, I don't want to make it sound like I really dislike, he doesn't dislike anybody, but I think he just has spent so much time being attacked by scientists for daring to hold a kind of different idea that he's a bit sort of defensive about it.
So when you're sitting down and talking to Houston Smith, it seems to me this is a guy who's very comfortable in the realm of the uncertain and the mysterious. Mm-hmm. And certainty is, if not the enemy, then something to be. It's almost as though you wouldn't kid yourself by being certain about this realm of consciousness, of thought, of mind, of human, of universe, that certainty is a bit of a mug's game in that context. Is that right?
Absolutely. And if you think about it, he would say that so many of the problems in you know, 21st century life and 20th century life are because somebody has some idea of certainty. And this is a problem both within, like, a religious traditions and within scientific traditions. Like, you could be – and religion is full of different, you know, church authorities believing they knew exactly what it was and then trying to impose a certain kind of order or a certain set of beliefs. And it's just not a really humble way to approach the world.
So let's hear more from Houston Smith. What's this bit about?
Okay, so, so this was more – about how to go forward without knowing, you know, how to go forward with uncertainty. And I was, you know, just feeling like sometimes you know, things are really going right. You kind of figure out, you think you know what's going on, and then all of a sudden everything falls apart, and you fall on your face and you got to get up all over again. And I just was sort of looking to him as someone who was much older and had a lot of experience. Is this what I could expect from life in general? I mean, is there some way to inoculate myself against this situation? So this is what this clip is about.
As I kind of stagger forward and try to understand this.
And like all of us, I heard a monk speaking to an audience, and somebody in the audience said, "Do you ever fall down?" "Oh, all the time." "What do?" "We pick ourselves up and take a few steps till we fall down again." Now, that's appropriate modesty, and it's also true. That's the way we all lurch through life.
Have you had moments where your faith has been tested or it's been...
Well, you know, it's strange, but I really haven't. When I was in graduate school, atheism was a going thing, but... It never seemed to make sense to me because it is the absence of something. You know, in the Greek, A is the negative. A Gnostic is one who knows and put an A before it. An agnostic does not know.
It seems what you're saying is also faith can't be arrived at intellectually. You can't rationalize your way there. You have to just feel it or have the experience.
This is not a clear or good way to put it, but unless we are tragically schizophrenic, our minds have a spell check built into them, are capable of saying, no, down that road, it's not right. This is the right road. They have this capacity. It's got, now I am reaching to change my analogy, a sense of where the North Pole of truth is. It has given us the knowledge that we know about the world, not just factual knowledge, but how we should live our lives.
A couple of things that really strike me just in listening to Houston Smith, when you're honest enough to say, as I just stagger through trying to figure out, you know, what it is, why we're here, what this is all about, and he pounces. He says, like all of us. Mm. And then a couple of minutes later, you know, the expression, you lurch through life, and which, you know, may not be the most inspiring thing, but it's kind of, there is a comfort in it. As you say, it's comforting to hear him talk about this stuff. Maybe we're all lurching through life. Is that what he's saying?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think it's, you know, life is hard. And all kinds of people try to tell you that there's some right elixir you can drink, or there's some right system to follow, or there's some right book to read or whatever. But I think that it's hard all the way through.
So how did he have to kick you out at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Were you ready to pitch a tent and just move in?
Oh yeah. I mean, the poor guy, he was getting tired. He's
90,
old.
Jeff. Give
he's
him a break.
He's 90 years old. I could have gone on forever. I mean, I was all excited. I had my list of questions, but I realized, okay, he's getting tired. And he wasn't, I mean, his sort of debating, you know, rigor, argumentative type skills were not really there. It was like I said before, he kind of had, it's like, in the end, there was just sort of this aphoristic, paradoxical sense of what it was to be, what the kind of deep mystical truths were, and he spoke in that kind of aphoristic way, and it was much more just about his presence, you know. And
how do you part ways? How do you what?
Well,
tell me a little bit about this moment we're about to hear.
Well, so we'd had this. So now, this is now almost 2 hours into it, and we'd had this wonderful conversation, and you know, and he said all these lovely, flattering things. He said, you know, he said people sit down 4 times. Of a week, and but this was really the most amazing conversation. I haven't had such a wonderful conversation. He was giving me all kinds of flattery, and he just really made me feel like the most important person in the room. And even though, you know, later I got a fax from him, because I set all this up by fax, and it had this sort of my request. This is after it, and in his handwriting at the top was, did we meet or not? Like, so it was like, it was
humility,
great.
Jeff.
Totally.
Humility.
I was like, this is it. This is the forces of uncertainty right there. I mean, but I figured it was a bit of a cliche, but I thought I would just ask him his sort of, what's his parting advice, you know, for a kind of person trying to work their way in the world. I'm sure he gets this all of the time, and he does. But anyway, I asked him, what's his parting advice? And this is what he said.
I feel silly asking this, but.
No.
But I wanted to know about if you had any. For a young person like myself, like my friends and other people, advice if you had to give for how to be.
Okay, I get asked that a lot.
Yes.
And it has two parts. The first is, I'm too old. I've retired from giving advice. But the second part is, there are two bits of advice that are perennial, always true. Follow the light where it leads, and the second is, seek and ye shall find.
I know about the seeking, but what does it mean, the light, meaning the spirit?
Follow the light where it leads. Okay.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
It's just the movement.
Yes.
And that it, have faith that the movement will lead you into a place you need to be.
Right. I think I can piggyback on that in this way. That hope is good and despair is not. So, yes, be hopeful that if you seek, you will find, and so on.
But it's hard not to feel despair, too, sometimes, when you can't find.
That's part of the human lot.
Wow. This, you know, I'm thinking a tattoo. Hope is good, despair is not. The way he just distills things, right?
Yeah.
You know what really gets me about listening to the two of you move towards saying goodbye, when you say, Okay, look, I feel really silly asking this. That's the most emphatic I've heard him during this whole conversation. No, no. You know, whatever you need to ask is not silly. I mean, he was, you know, it sounds like he's on the edge of his seat. I mean, he's really, he wants you to know that whatever you're asking, ask. You know, not you're not silly in asking any of this. I mean, just the strength in his voice at that point.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I think that's part of the reason why he's such an important figure is that he has this incredible compassion, and but yet he brings a kind of strength of conviction to it. And so there's nothing soft or wet about it. You know, it's not sentimental. It's very fierce. And you get that I got that sense throughout the talk with him. You know, he was just fierce about defending his views, and he'd be indignant with other, you know, when you bring up, you know, a particular kind of challenge, but in a way that he was still open to it, but he just was, he was no shrinking violet.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a, you know, the a Carl Jung story, but I think it was a radio interviewer said, so, you know, Dr. Jung, is this what you believe? And apparently the story goes that there was a ferocity in the reply, and it was, young man, I don't believe, I know. That wasn't you, right? You weren't the radio reporter.
No, that wasn't me. That wasn't me.
But can you imagine, you know, like that kind of encounter with someone who you who seems to have been in touch with something, you know, lesser mortals aren't touching or something.
Yeah. Well, it's intoxicating. You know, you I think this is why people join. I mean, I don't. Houston Smith doesn't love this. This is why people join cults. This is why people find gurus. Like, they want an island, a rock of certainty they can just hang themselves on. And
the intoxicating nature of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You get kind of entrained by that, and people just want to be. They just hang on because they're scared. I mean, I think, and all of us kind of hang on to a particular kind of truth. And you realize even a lot of scientists do. And I don't mean this in an uncharitable way to science, but it's, you know, often when you're holding so tightly to a particular kind of certainty, you have to wonder, you have to look at your hands, you know, you have to wonder why you're making that grip. You know, there's something about fear there.
And so for people who aren't, who don't have the benefit of seeing your hands at the moment, white knuckles, clenched,
you're
holding on tightly to something.
Because you're scared, you know, at some really, really deep level that what if it's not true? And like, how do you, this is why, you know, with its Taoism, Buddhism, you know, and all these perennial philosophies he talks about, there's a certain kind of surrender to uncertainty that is just, that is the, and surrender to the, recognizing things are always going to be changing. You're not, you can't quite know. And somehow trying to be at peace with that, that's the deepest wisdom you can bring. And then there's the having the you can have a faith in that, but then there's having this island of faith that you're connected in that way like that Houston would have. To me, I envy that, but I don't think I'll ever have that. You know, I'm too agnostic. I'm too in the uncertain. The faith I look for is just that things will always be changing, and I can just have kind of faith in that.
But it sounds like that's okay.
It can. I think it can be okay.
Listening to Houston, you know, you're just going to lurch along through life with the rest of us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Great stuff, Jeff. Thank you.
No problem. It's good to be here.
Jeff Warren is the author of The Head Trip, Adventures on the Wheel of Consciousness. In a few weeks, we're going to meet a guy named William Lobdell. He spent years on the religion beat for the Los Angeles Times, then realized he just didn't believe anymore in any of it. Losing my religion. Has it ever happened to you? Tell us about it. Write to us, tapestry@cbc.ca. Tell us where you're from, and please include your phone number. Or call us, 416-205-6017. Once again, 205-6017. If you're calling long distance, go through the operator to reverse the charges. Losing my religion in the weeks ahead. Oh no, I've said too much. I set it up. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. Losing my religion. Tapestry is produced by Susan Mahoney and Aaron Pettit. Sound production is by Dave Field. Our webmaster is Liz Nagy. I'm Mary Hines. See you next week.